Hello, everyone. It's Aurora.
And Kelly, and you're listening to The Opt-In.
Today, we have something a little different for you. It's election day, and we know there's a lot of feeling of stress, anxiety, and quite frankly, I think a lot of us are scared at what the outcome may be.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't forget fear.
Mm-hmm.
So, dear listeners, we have an offering for you today. We're speaking with Reverend Meta Morgan, who is a powerful interfaith minister, singer, and activist.
And we hope this conversation today with Reverend Retta can bring a moment of grounding during this very upending time.
No matter what happens, with love, we are here for you, and we continue to opt in every day.
Reverend Retta, if you don't mind sharing with our audience a mini introduction of who you are.
Sure, happy to. Peace and blessings. And I am Reverend Retta Morgan. I am an interfaith minister. I would say an activist. I'm a singer. I like to call myself a healer first and foremost.
So as we were getting ready to have this conversation with you today, there were a couple of things that you mentioned about this moment in time that we're living, that it's a seminal moment in a series of moments.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Talk to us about what that means for you as an offering of how we can contextualize what's happening.
I'm fascinated by how important this election is becoming in terms of this country and the world, in terms of all eyes being on us. And this comes in the midst of racial uprising, in the midst of a pandemic. There are all kinds of storms, there's fires, there's, you know, just the list goes on and on. So what is important, what is seminal, may look different for each of us, but we are all experiencing this onslaught, you know. And in the midst of all of these intense things that we're having to navigate, we have this election that has incredible implication for who we'll be as we move forward. So yeah, it's just something, just like noticing my body as I sit here. I think it's important to notice sort of the implication, especially if we are prone to be extremely reactionary around who might win or who might not win, to put a little distance between that and just notice that whoever wins, this is a big moment for us as a nation, possibly as a species.
So, you know, when we talk about this moment, one of the questions that we wanted to ask is that the moment is contextualized by the right to vote and voting. And we were just curious, what does voting mean to you, Reverend Retta?
Well, it's certainly something my ancestors had to fight for. Yes. That's what comes up first. It was not a given for my people always. It's also not a given for women always, right? There's a number of folks in this country who've really had to fight to get the right to vote. What it means beyond that is an opportunity to be engaged as a group consciousness. So my individual vote may not mean a whole lot, right? Mm-hmm. But I join in the group effort, the group consciousness, the group effort. And whether the person I'm voting for wins or not, I am saying on a vibrational level that I am engaged, I am connected to the group activity. I see it as a spiritual practice. I see most things as spiritual practice, but in this moment, I'm seeing particularly the opportunity to vote in a mindful way, to vote with clear intentions about, you know, voting being of service to the moment, regardless of who you're voting for. If we're voting in service to the collective of our country, in service to holding an intention that we are holding each other accountable and sort of up-leveling, that we hold a sort of North Star and want to aim toward doing better than we're doing now, you know, that the vote can be a step along the way. It's not the only step, right, but a step along the way in terms of being connected to the larger community and supporting an intention to keep holding the politicians accountable, holding ourselves accountable by this one act.
Do you remember the first time you voted?
I don't remember the details. I was living still in Washington. I grew up in Washington, D.C. What I can remember is sort of the emotional space of, I get to do this now. Like, I can remember, I may have received a call from my mother that day. Somebody lectured me on why this was an important moment. They didn't have to lecture me about voting, but they wanted to remind me, either my mom or my dad or somebody. I remember hearing from somebody, you know, people fought and died for you to be able to do this. And, you know, and so that's what I remember about it. What I remember also is each time I've voted, it feels important. Even though I'm one person, it still feels like an important part of what I can do. And I'm struck by who I'm being as I'm doing it also mattering, you know, like what I'm bringing with me, the intention that I bring. I believe that also matters.
Oh, I'm going to have you untether that a little bit. Say more about that. Who I'm being.
Yeah, you know, my life's work is around healing and kind of cultivating embodied truth that who we are, spirit first, and then human. And to remember that we are connected to something bigger than who we are, you know, we're connected to transcendence, to the eternal, to the formless, you know, and the many names that we call that in our spiritual and religious traditions. There are many names that we call that, but I believe we are connected. And if we can remember and refer to that and embody that and live in that and let that live through us, when we go to the polls, there's something bigger than me joining me. My ancestors, they join me. I bring all of that with me. And so when I click that button, there's, you know, there's a community around me celebrating, joining in. And I think that that means something. I'll give you one example of how I think that means something. When we believe that we are empowered and powerful, I believe it creates the space for us to see some things differently. Like if I vote and I believe I'm small and I don't matter and why do it because might not matter anyway, there's a certain kind of energy I'm bringing. When I vote and I know that there's a community of beingness with me, I'm voting from a powerful place. It's one person, but in fact, it's a huge vibrational energy I'm bringing with me. And I think that has impact. It has unseen, untouchable impact, but impact nonetheless.
So when I seal up my envelopes, both envelopes, I'm going to imbue it with my intention as I send it on its way. Yeah.
Yes.
I love that. I love that, Rev.
You know, similar to you, Reverend Retta, voting was always something that was talked about in our household as something that was critical. And it was critical because of who died and who sacrificed before our arrival in order for us to get the vote, the opportunity to vote. And for most folks to recognize that, for many, that actually didn't happen into the 1960s. Yeah. I mean, just think about that. Yeah. You know, I think about my father who fought in two wars and he went out and fought for this country without actually having the right to vote. His voice in the country, and that, quite frankly, the right to vote to women that look like me actually only came a few years before my birth. It's a huge deal. It's a huge deal. And it's a huge deal not only in understanding and the recognizing the accountability of our singular voice, but as you said, the voice of the community, the voice of the human community here in these United States. And are we voting with that reflection? And are we voting with that sense of empowerment and mattering for the service to the whole?
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that about your father. That's something, it's sobering, isn't it, mm-hmm. to remember that he served this country, I'm imagining, with honor and proudly,
yes.
and yet did not have this very basic right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's sobering. And so those of us who have that right, this is really... It's an honoring of your
yes.
father and those folks who participated in this country, worked for this country, helped to build and defend and protect this country,
yes.
and did not have that right. How dare we not vote?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
How dare we not vote?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
You know? I grapple with this, and Aurora and I talk about it a lot as to... Why do we think, and especially as white women, why do we think we don't matter? Why is it so hard for us to understand that we matter?
Hmm. Well, so don't you think we get an awful lot of messages in this culture about roles? Like, depending on how you identify yourself, depending on the identities you hold, there are almost... It's almost as if we have like written out contracts or something. If you are this role, this is your job.
Yeah.
And it depends also on what generation you were born in, right? So my mom, as a woman, she went to Howard University. She's one of the first in her family. She could only major in a very limited number of majors, right?
Mm-hmm.
Her role was cut out. It was expected that she would be a mom, a housekeeper, and at her generation, you could add like maybe secretary or teacher. And in the community that I grew up in, Black working class, and I think this is true for many communities, not only did you have a sort of spelled out role, but you were expected to do it humbly and without sort of bringing attention to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So the more kind of martyred you were, the more you know, invested in everybody else's livelihood, the more you were held up as the model woman, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you were selfless, you were virtuous. And I think in each generation, we might redefine those roles and tweak them a bit. But throughout our history, women's roles in the patriarchal system are to support men, are to raise children, are to make sure homes work well. Like there are roles that have, some of those themes have gone down through the generations. And I think if we do that work and we aren't acknowledged, you know, through generations, we start to lose a sense of our own self-significance, our own importance. We start to lose that. You know,
yeah.
And that's just one theory,
yeah.
right? I think there are many reasons why we think we don't matter. I think there are some existential things about how we're born. Like, you know, I have this memory of being somewhere warm and supported, and I have a very little bit of memory of actually coming to the birth canal and coming here. And I'm like, I'm sure I didn't think these words, but I just remember the sensation is, what the is going on here? You know, like, you know, you're warm and cared for, and then you're out here with, the, you know. So there's separation. There's the,
yes.
the first breath separation anxiety. Oh, my God, I'm out here. You know, what's going to happen? You know, and I think many of us get a sense of whether we matter or not in the very first moments of being on this planet. So that's for everybody. And then, you know, depending on who we are and how we're nurtured, that thing is either we get a contradiction of that or we get that affirmed that we are alone. And there's lots of confirmation of that as we go through our lives. And so it's a particular, it's why I'm so excited about healing, because it's a particularly strenuous and courageous line of work to undo that.
Ooh.
It's particularly courageous.
Yes.
It's courageous to stand up when you're expected to just go, you know, gently along doing your job, to stand up and say, wait a minute, I matter here.
Yes.
What I want, what I think, who I am matters. So, yeah.
So, like, we're looking at our planet and our beingness and our fellow traumatized human beings.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see us being called to a more communal, a more interconnected way? We've been talking a lot about community, and I'm so interested to hear your thoughts.
Well, isn't it interesting because of the pandemic that we've had this space to where we've had to sort of separate ourselves? Isn't it interesting? I live alone, sort of out in the country a bit. And so it has been isolation to some extent. You know, it has been quite a practice. And then think about, you know, being out in public and being 6 feet apart and all of those kinds of things. And I believe at the spiritual level, we're being reconfigured. I also believe that as we are out of our habitual, we get to appreciate what we had in a very particular way, right? So I think out of the longing for touch and connection comes the invitation to hold that as precious in a different way. But we get to be worked on and work on ourselves so that when we come back together, oh, what a glorious idea, right? The first time you can just walk up to folks and just give them a hug again. So that's one level of coming together. We can use this time to really begin to appreciate that very simple thing, right? And I think the level of dismantling, reordering, the ways in which many of the systems that we've become accustomed to, the systems working in a particular way, the ways that those things that we have depended on are sort of coming apart, falling apart, being driven apart.
Yes.
You know, call us to have to come together to create new systems.
More on our conversation with Reverend Retta Morgan after the break. We need a change, and that's why you're here. That's why you stick through these conversations, as hard as they may be, and continue to challenge your communities to think bigger. We're here for liberation.
We know you know how important this work is, and we want to keep doing it. However, we need your support. You can pledge your contribution to our Patreon, Venmo, PayPal. All the links are at our website, theopt-in.com.
So what do you see as our growing edge? What's the spiritual invitation for us, Rev?
Yeah, I think every day, just waking up and at this, particularly now till the election and well into the next weeks and months, I think every day we're invited to our growing edge. If God forbid the current occupant of the White House decides he doesn't want to leave, then that's going to be a huge growing edge for all of us.
Yes.
We'll have to think on an edge. We'll have to find resources that we've never had to find before, right? We have to dig deeper to get up, to be able to think about how will I manage this on top of all these other things. I think it's a growing edge. I think to navigate that, to take a deep breath, right? To be connected to a tradition or a philosophy, a community, something that's bigger than the individual self, so that you have something to lean on and into in those times, right? Will support that growing edge. Right? But we're going to be sort of pushing into sort of pioneering territory yes. in terms of our own abilities, our strengths, our capacities, right? We're going to be pushing into new territory. And we're going to need to be resourceful. We're going to need to know, you know, when to stop and take a breath. Mm-hmm. And we will be learning on our feet. We'll be learning as we go. And I think that's true of these times in general, mm-hmm. right? Each day, we're hopefully learning new things about our own inner resources, getting mm-hmm. familiar, being introduced to, if you will, ourselves in the midst of, you know, such an incredible time. But don't you think this is an incredible time to be alive? I was just thinking today, this is probably mm-hmm. the most amazing time to have been born on this planet. Of all the eras yes. of human development,
yes.
we are here together now.
Yes.
I think it's extraordinary.
Yes. I agree with you, Reverend Retta, because I wake up and I'm like, wow, like today, like I get to be here right now. And how am I using what I have been gifted with, what I have sort of crafted and cultivated after all of these years? And how can I use that to support, shepherd, uplift this moment? Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. this moment. And it's it literally, it makes me so emotional sometimes. It's like, I get to be here. I get to be here and I get to contribute. I get to stand as witness and I get to hold Kelly's hand and I get to hold your hand and I get to share, like, we're here. We chose to be here.
I believe we are bearing witness to a kind of birthing of ourselves, yes. Birthing of our species.
Yes.
We're bearing witness to the earth's adjustment yes. during this time, a kind of birthing, if you will. I believe we are midwives.
Yes.
We're midwives. We are birthing in new possibilities for humanity.
And yeah. it's scary, it's messy, but it's also filled with wonder and
beauty,
it's filled
yeah.
with possibility. And for me, it's like this, like we get to reimagine it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We get to reimagine it because yeah. now we all know it's not really serving us the way it's been crafted and built. And
Absolutely.
Thank you to all those that contributed to the version that we now receive. But like mm-hmm. we get to reimagine it. And yeah. the creativity and the curiosity and the possibility of that, it mm-hmm. literally blows my mind and it blows my heart.
Yeah, we've outgrown the old.
Yes.
I don't think there was anything wrong,
no.
but we've outgrown it. We're at this juncture where we get to grow up spiritually.
Yes.
We get to mature. The growing edge is to realize there's more of us. There's more to us. There's more mm-hmm. capacity than we ever dreamt of.
Mm-hmm.
If we don't get opportunities to stretch ourselves, and sometimes stretching and reaching can be uncomfortable. Sometimes it even hurts.
Yes.
Right? But the stretching, we look around and then we've expanded in ways we didn't even know. And I think 100 years from now, we'll look back and say, boy, those were some painful times, but look where they stretch to. Now that's the vision I'm holding, because what's also true is that this could be the worst period mm-hmm. of the history of mankind, mm-hmm. right? The choices that we're sitting on right now, like this could be an absolute catastrophe of the dimensions we've never seen before. It could take centuries to recover,
yes.
if ever. Right. That is also true.
Yes.
I believe that spiritual traditions are so important in this moment, because we've got to cultivate choosing when we are hit with the reality that this could go very badly. Right.
Mm-hmm.
What are we going to do? Who are we going to be in that moment? If the occupant of the White House chooses not to go, who are we going to be
yes.
in that moment? What are we going to choose? What are we going to cultivate? Are we going to react and give way to our fear, to give way to our anxiety, to allow ourselves to be overwhelmed? Mm-hmm. Or are we going to keep bringing our minds and our hearts, wrapping our minds and hearts around the possibility, the vision, the idea that this is midwifery, that we're in a scary, messy place, but it's giving way to something greater than we can imagine, right? We're going to have to cultivate the ability to return to that visionary thinking in the midst of whatever's going on. That's a muscle that takes courage, mm-hmm. right? Takes courage to keep going there. It's holding the precious and the eternal right beside the what isness,
yes.
right? It's holding them both, seeing both as true, and then choosing how you're going to move forward in the midst of that. Mm. And I believe that also is a growing edge. We get to practice. We get to notice the gift of the opportunity.
Yes.
To choose that.
Mm.
It's a gift and an opportunity. In a time when you could choose a spectrum of things, to choose love, to choose connection, to choose to see the best in the one who can't see the best in themselves.
Yes.
You know, rather than that ugly name calling and what this one did or didn't do, to choose compassion, to choose to connect to our humanity, to keep looking for the answers, holding folks accountable, yes, but to do it from a place grounded in love, yes. grounded in this vision of where we're going. I think it makes a difference.
Mm.
I think it'll make a difference. Yeah.
Absolutely. Oof.
Grounding in love. Grounding in love. Mm-hmm. Reverend Retta, do you have any tools? Do you have any tools mm-hmm. for us in grounding in love?
Well, there are several that I use. I was using this morning. I talk a lot about the heartbreak and how we can be with what's hard and the growing of our hearts. And a practice that I've learned to do is to let myself cry, to feel mm-hmm. deeply, but to actually set a timer, and to as that timer's on, to really fully let myself go into those dark places what we all try to avoid, mm-hmm. to go there. If I'm thinking something, oh my God, what are we going to do? Oh, I'm so scared, or just crying, like whatever it is, to be in touch with that part of myself as well. And then when the timer goes off, I stop, I put a bookmark there, mm-hmm. and I try to do something that's grounding, like, you know, to go outside and sit on the earth, or to listen to something that's funny, or to give someone a call. So it takes my mind back sort of up and out of the dark wells, and brings me back to sort of my resting place in terms of where my consciousness is. And what that does, it cultivates my ability to know that I can handle that space within myself.
Mm.
I hope all of us cry, but I'm talking the ugly cry with snot and boogers and, you know, your stomach hurts kinds of cry. Or you're wailing, you're so loud the people about to call the cops on you kind of cry, right? Like get down in there and really let yourself feel the angst, like to feel that. Most of us won't allow ourselves because we're not sure we can come out. There's so many layers of hard things happening, right?
Yes.
But if we practice it, if we use this as a practice to go in there and to feel deeply, to be in touch, and not to make ourselves wrong about doing it, like to be willing to be connected to that part of ourselves, just as we're connecting to the visionary, like to also be connected to the part that's small and scared. Mm-hmm. Oh my God, what's going to mm-hmm. happen if we lose our job? How will we pay our mortgage? Like that's real, right? To
yes.
be, to allow ourselves to feel that and to know that that's part of our humanity. Right. If we're going to be yes. whole, we got to be willing to be with, to bear witness to all the parts. Because quite frankly, you know, to be in joy is dependent on our ability to go down in those depths. If we don't know the depths of the of what's hard, how are we going to really rise to the visionary and really believe that it's possible? Right. I want to believe that with every fiber of my being, that we can be a species that moves through this time and looks back and say, whew, that was hard. But now, you know, we have arrived somewhere where we know how to be in community.
Yes.
We know how to have a political system that works for people rather than against. We have learned how to not put people in prison and call ourselves, restoring them. We have learned that there are other ways to be with people who are misaligned or having a harder time. So we grew ourselves up spiritually, right? So it's important to be able to go to the depth in order and to be able to hold that in order to really be able to hold the embodied visionary aspects of ourselves. So that's one. Also, I call myself a singing healer. And that is because I believe so profoundly in sound. The Christian Bible says in the beginning there was the Word, right? And Word is vibration. Right. Mm. So sound and singing is, you know, in this talk about seminal, this work that has influenced, centuries of humanity starts with the idea that the word was the first thing, vibration, sound. Right. So singing, something as simple as singing your own name, your own name, to take a deep breath. If I put my hand on my heart. Redda, Redda, Redda. And those who are listening won't be able to see, but I'm also moving. I'm also moving. So the movement and vibration, it literally recalibrates who we are, right? If we're in anxiety, if we need a moment, we need to ground. That repeated sound and movement literally, like scientifically, realigns us. It sets us up to ground and to wherever we were in terms of anxiety. Sound can actually pull us out of it, of that state, right? Mm-hmm. Something as simple as your name, singing a word that has a meaning for you, peace. Peace, peace, peace. And if you're not a person who could make up a melody on the spot, just singing one note and feeling the vibration move through your body, just feeling that. So it shifts just the intellectual saying or thinking of the word. It becomes an experience that vibration moves through the body, right? It's a different kind of knowing. It's using more muscles. So there's sound. There is grounding. There's going to sit on the earth, which I think is number one grounding. This living being calibrates at a vibration of groundedness. Yeah. That's why we call it grounding, right?
Yes.
It's connected to the ground for a reason. So to be in relationship with nature, to find a place that speaks to you of peace, that inspires you because it's beautiful, that allows you to access a restfulness within. Meditation continues to be one of the world's best. And if you've been meditating, even a little, if you close your eyes for 5 minutes and breathe deeply, then you have a practice, right? Something as simple as that. Over time, if you extend that, if you have a practice 20 minutes, a half an hour of being able to sit quietly. If you have a particular meditation, a school of meditation that you work with, or if it's just you quieting your mind and being with yourself, that practice over time is proven scientifically to have incredible benefits for your health, for your outlook, just your general well-being. And in a time like this, could really pay off. You know, the cumulative effect of the quiet time that you have spent could support you in so many ways. If you are starting a practice during this time, is still very, very powerful. Mm. So meditation. And for those who like to move, there's yoga, there's Tai Chi, there's running. So there are many, many ways, whether they're the quiet going in practices, whether they're the expression outwardly with singing or moaning, whether movements of all sorts. Yeah. So it's a question of just finding the things that speak to you.
Oh, so helpful, Rev. You sent me over a poem. I don't know if it was a poem or a song.
So will you share your psalm with us?
I would love to. Woke up this morning with this. One of the things that is difficult about now is the intensity and speed with which the unconscious and habitual are becoming conscious. We are facing the collapse, dismantling, and reordering of practically all our major systems. We are facing wounds that have been festering for centuries. We are facing the consequences of our misalignment with this living being we call home. We are navigating pestilence, managing our personal and communal lives, all while technology and science are pushing, blurring the line between what's known and unknown at breakneck speeds. So much of this is happening to us. We get to choose how we respond. Let's choose love. Let's look at our world through the lens of love. Build our movements from love, birth our babies and bury our dead with love as midwife and witness. Cry the ugly cry kind of tears, moan and wail connected to our hearts. Let's stand on love as we vote, roll up our sleeves and get to work no matter who wins the election. Post-election, let's sing tunes about how our ancestors made it through hard times, about how we won't let our babies and grandbabies down by giving up now. Let's choose one conversation at a time, not to let this current paralyzing division win. Let's look up from our devices and see that we can build bridges back to each other, every step taken, one step at a time, rooted in love. Let love in. Let love win.
Beautiful. Thank you for sharing that with us on this day, and may we be grounded and embraced by that prayer, by those words, by that vibration.
Thank you so much for having me, and blessings to you, this amazing work you do, blessings to this moment, to this incredible implication of now. Just blessings, blessings, blessings.
Thank you all so much for being here.
We absolutely love you, love you.
Music for this episode is by Jordan McCree, and the opt-in is produced by Rachel Ishikawa.
See you next week.
Bye-bye, everyone. Stay safe.
Much love. Bye-bye.